Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, my second guest today says that healing with art is powerful medicine. In fact, she says it's the most powerful medicine that we know of in healing the whole person on physical, vital, mental, emotional, psychic, and spiritual levels. Dr. Mary Rockwood Lane joins us around 12:30 to discuss Healing with the Arts, the book and 12-week program that she's developed with medical doctor Michael Samuels. But first, we're going to explore what it takes to maintain a beginner's heart and mind in the path of the novice mystic with Dr. Paul Dunyon. Let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Dunyon. He's the co-founder of the Connecticut Men's Gathering, founder of Boys to Men, and founder of the Crofton Mystery School. He has a doctorate in education. He's taught philosophy at the University of Connecticut and is a licensed professional counselor with his own counseling and consulting practice. He's written numerous books, including the one we're discussing today, Path of the Novice Mystic, Maintaining a Beginner's Heart and Mind. Dr. Paul Dunyon, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Vicki. Thank you.
Well, I want to just start off with something that I read on your blog, I believe it was, and that was that you said secular mysticism is the theme of your book, Path of the Novice Mystic. But unlike many spiritual traditions of mysticism, secular mysticism is not oriented around religion. And your wish is that readers will experience your book as an invitation to live intimately. So tell me what you mean by that.
Well, traditional mysticism is about unity. In all the mystical traditions, there's some form of unity. Like in Buddhism, it could be with enlightenment or kindness, Christianity, Judaism. And I use the notion of intimacy synonymously with union. In this case, a secular simply meaning that there's no need to have a religious orientation or affiliation, but you could. And that the four expressions of mystery in my book that are encouraging union or a sense of intimacy are the self, others, nature, and God, if you want to use it on a spiritual level.
Okay. And you describe us human beings as wayfarers on this journey we call life. And you say that we choose to decide who we are along the way by responding to this odyssey as one of two types. We either show up as a protester or we as an acceptor. Tell us about that, if you would.
Yes. I mean, I would translate the protester often into the conqueror. I think that there is a way in which folks take on the posture of wanting to conquer life with excessive will. And then there's the second position of feeling conquered or feeling victimized by life. And it's easy to either get locked into one or the other, or both, actually, moving back and forth. But in both cases, it becomes very difficult to live what I'm calling intimately.
Right.
I mean, life becomes it's an adversarial relationship at that point.
Right. And we often take on the victim role if we fall into that pattern too, right?
Right.
So
right.
If we show up as acceptors, then obviously the opposite is true. So talk to us a little bit about if we show up as acceptors on this odyssey, what we're doing differently.
Well, I think first we're accepting life on life's terms. And anthropologists have often talked about in a Latin term called the mysterium tremendum, which is simply the great mystery, which shows up in so many initiatory practices for indigenous peoples. It seemed that they had a grasp of it was significant if you were going to help someone move from childhood to adulthood, then it was going to be very important to get them clear about life being essentially mysterious, insecure, and unpredictable, and have an acceptance of that rather than battle that. Our culture tends almost to do the opposite. It likes to formularize attempts at completely demystifying life and allegedly making it secure. And it can do that with a whole host of things. I mean, it can be the right education or the right neighborhood, the right bank account, the right employment. And these formulas are incredibly misleading in that they're not bad things, but they won't ultimately remove life's basic insecurity.
Right. So tell me a little bit, let's just talk a little bit about the book title, Novice
Yep.
Mystic. And
Yep.
Where did this come from? And I love that you say maintaining a beginner's heart and mind, because I think,
mm-hmm.
you know, so often we do become jaded along the way. And
I think
that beginner's heart and mind is a great place to be myself.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to us a little bit about that, if you would.
Well, it's a place, I think, where when we're living from the acceptance that life is essentially an impenetrable mystery and that it will be insecure, there's a way in which we can reclaim the kind of awe, maybe, and wonder of a beginner's heart and mind, where life, again, is not something to conquer or be conquered by, but something to have a deep relatedness to. And that can help, and I think that can happen mostly through awe, wonder, curiosity, and also self-forgiveness. I mean, because the journey is going to be at times incredibly challenging.
Right, right. You say that we have to come from a place of lifelong learning, which I think, too, is very important. How has that shown up in your life?
Well, in a number of ways, and recently in some of the teaching I do, I'm noticing that I really have to identify myself as a student of love, for example. I mean, constantly finding myself, wondering about it, how it lives in my world, how it lives in my relationships, my capacity to receive, my capacity to give, my capacity to be understanding. I mean, those things are so organic and evolving that if I'm going to have some commitment to the process of loving, I have to remain a student. I can't fall into the pretense that I've figured the whole thing out. It'll be very self-defeating.
Right, right. And life would be pretty boring, I think, once we've got it all
fixed. I think you're right.
Paul, in the book, you say it's important to ask why. You talk about larger stories, and
right.
want to go into ego stories and soul stories in a moment. But you say
yep.
that it's important that we ask why we should be interested in living larger stories and what it takes to live those larger stories. So tell us why that's so important.
Well, I think living in a larger story is a way of saying sometimes I talk about life's purpose. I also like what the mythologist Michael Mead says about getting clear about your errand. What errand am I'm on? When I can get clear about my purpose or my errand, or at least be devoted to being clear, I'm going to be stepping into probably a larger story than being satisfied for cultural definitions of who I am or should be.
Right.
Those stories tend to those mandates, I think, put me in a smaller story, especially when my work with men. I mean, constantly I'm hearing from men, what does it mean for me to live with more soul? What does it mean for me to live with more heart and move away from cultural restrictions?
Right. I want to ask you some questions about the work that you're doing with men, because I think it's key. But I'm going to go to break a little early. We're going to see if we can call you back, having a little breakup on the conversation here. And I do want listeners to be able to hear what you're saying, because I think your work is important and I think they'll enjoy it. So everyone,
okay.
please stay tuned. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Dr. Paul Dunyon, and his new book is called Path of the Novice Mystic. Will be right back.
What's going on behind your eyes? What you see in me, I will never know. That's the mystery of love. But each time we kiss, ignorance. That's the mystery. mystery. That's the mystery. That's the mystery.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair with Conversations Live. If you'd like to gain more exposure for your business, service, or event, or if you'd like to raise awareness for an issue or topic you're passionate about, call me. Let's talk about ways we might partner to shine the spotlight on you and bring you the recognition you deserve. Call me at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
Some people know a good thing when they hear it. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
That's the mystery of while I do that work, who made them long ago.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And my guest in this segment is Dr. Paul Dunyon, the co-founder of the Connecticut Men's Gathering, and the author of his latest book is called Path of the Novice Mystic, Maintaining a Beginner's Heart and Mind. And before the break, we were talking about the importance of asking why we should be interested in living in larger stories, Paul. And one of the things I wanted to touch on here is the difference between ego stories and soul stories when we're living those larger stories.
Well, an ego story, when it's enlarged, is really mostly meant to be a story that's impressive. A soul story is a story that's really aimed at capturing some experience that's lived from deep heart and emotional intimacy, and longing for a sense of connection, longing for a sense of meaning and depth. Large ego stories are typically not attached to more depth and more meaning. They're mostly attached to some pretense and being impressive. And unfortunately, popular.
And so, but you say there is life after ego. We can learn to strengthen our ego without falling prey to it.
Oh, yes. In fact, in the book, I talk about just remaining what I call ego vigilant, meaning I'm never going to have a perfectly sized ego. In some way, I'm either going to lack entitlement somewhere in my life, for example, which would be a smaller expression of ego, or I'm going to be living with excessive entitlement, which means I need to address the largeness of my ego.
Right.
But I think that very task is actually a spiritual practice, to remain ego vigilant.
Right.
What is the size of my ego, and what is it asking for such that I can create greater union with myself, with the others?
Right. And so tell me, you said this is a never-ending thing, really. So how do you work with your ego, for example?
I pay a lot of attention to how I'm living with it, especially in terms of entitlement. For example, I was in a training a week ago with a world-leading person in the area of chronic trauma. And at one point in the afternoon, he said something which really bothered me and I thought would impact negatively some of the younger therapists in the room. And I had trouble finding the entitlement to pause and say out loud, you know, this bothers me. That was an example of me needing more ego strength in that context. In mm-hmm. some other context, I might have adequate ego strength. But in that context, in that particular day, I did not.
Right. And so, go ahead, sorry.
Well, to some degree, it means, how am I living my personal truth right now? Do I have adequate voice? Or do I have so much voice that there isn't space for others and my voice isn't invitational? It's not inviting others to bring their truth forward. It could go either way.
I like that perspective. I like that perspective. Let's talk about what you call the grand dance to which we've all been invited. You talk about the dance between will, fate, and destiny, with fate
right.
being the stage. Talk to us about that, if you would.
Well, yeah. The perspective is that we each have a will that generates choices. Some philosophers have called it condemned to be free, meaning even to say I'm not getting out of bed and I'm staying in bed all day means that I just made a choice to stay there. So there's a sense in which we seem to have a will that drives us. And then there's fate, which is all things, people, places, and things that are out of my control. And a dance takes place. And I tend to what I call anthropomorphize fate, meaning I see it as kind of I give it personhood,
right.
so that my will's dancing with it in some way. And in that dance, I'm going to be asked to either exercise a significant amount of will or maybe a significant amount of surrender, depending upon the power of fate. For example, if someone I love dies, I'm not going to have a lot of power over that situation. My will is going to be short on influence to change things. And in that case, the dance is likely asking me to surrender to what has occurred to me in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So it mostly means staying mindful of, is this situation calling for more will on my part and my connection or union with life would be deeper because I am being more willful, or is it asking me to surrender? The outcome of that dance, I'm calling my destiny.
Interesting. One of the challenges that I know many people have is developing the capacity to forgive ourselves and to forgive others. What are your thoughts around forgiveness? And let's focus on ourselves. How do we forgive ourselves? Because I think that's where many of us get stuck.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the word itself, the prefix for comes from the High German meaning away. So I like to think of forgiveness as away give my transgression. And what does it take for me, in terms of your question, what does it take for me to get to a place where I'm willing to give away my transgressions and reclaim my essential worth as a human being? I think one of the major roadblocks is that so many of us were parented from a place of shame, that the thinking is, if I shame myself enough around the transgression, around the mistake, I won't make it again.
Right.
And that, I think, is the major roadblock to self-forgiveness.
And so how do we get over that then?
I think some mindfulness around, I may have been parented this way one day where my parents actually thought that they could shame me into appropriate behavior, and to stop putting some distance between the propensity to do so and kind of give it back to my parents like it was their dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And that dynamic is probably not going to help me be more creative, more productive, or even make modifications of my behavior. I may need to lean into more forgiveness. And in the book, one thing I've dawned on me when I was writing is that forgiveness doesn't have an alternative state of being, meaning people will say, I'm either forgiving or I'm not forgiving. And I became very interested in, well, what the heck is not forgiving? What's really going on there? Because that's a negative state.
Mm-hmm.
And where I ended up going was that typically cursing goes on there.
Cursing. Did you say cursing?
Cursing.
Okay.
Meaning, I am diminishing my self-worth in some way. Through uh-huh. ridicule, blame. But some way I'm cursing myself. It really does, forgiveness to a great degree, I think, does mean being willing to call off the cursing.
Interesting. Well, that's a great segue, actually, into I wanted to talk to you a little about the work that you're doing with men and have been doing for many years with men.
Yes.
And I've been studying a lot of Brené Brown's work right now on shame and vulnerability, and you just mentioned shame. And just to be clear, she defines guilt as feeling bad about what I did or didn't do. I didn't do enough. And shame as feeling bad about myself, that I am not enough. And she always studied women, not men, until somebody in the audience brought it to her attention. And after studying many men, she was surprised to find how many felt shame, but I was equally surprised to find out how differently they dealt with it from women. I wonder if you could just talk from a male perspective on shame and how that usually shows up.
Yeah, I have worked with hundreds and hundreds of men, actually, around this. Well, I think the place to begin is, culturally, men are not supposed to have a deep, meaningful interior world, a deep, meaningful, emotional interior world. So we're not supposed to know or be conscious of the fact that we are experiencing deep, negative, or deep emotional feelings. The one we're given permission, basically, for two emotional energies, anger and excitement. And those are safe. And so very often I'm working with a man who believes he's actually violated his manhood because he's either hurt or he's grieving or he thinks he's loving too deeply. And he's needing to reclaim the entitlement to have a deep emotional life and not follow the cultural mandate that he's supposed to be doing something more superficial emotionally.
Right. And she said, that Brené Brown, in her work, that when men feel that shame that you're talking of, they will often lash out in anger, fear-based, obviously. Is that your experience, too? Like, women will, you know, act totally differently, but men will get angry. It comes out in different format.
Yes, my experience is almost any feeling will be translated into anger or excitement for men. That's the only one, the only two they have cultural permission for.
And talking of cultural permission, a lot of what I've read also said that that women don't want their men to be vulnerable and don't want them to show. They see it as weakness. Is that something you would say is true?
You know, I was sitting with a couple last week that was true of, so it's interesting you bring it up. But I haven't found it to be paramount. More, I have found that the couples I have worked with, the female feels alone in her vulnerability in the relationship. She's the women I've worked with, they're longing to be joined with the male stepping forward with some sense of vulnerability. So I haven't had the experience of mostly of women having the reaction you talked about.
Yeah, it kind of surprised me when I read that. So I appreciate your perspective on that. Well, this is really interesting stuff, the path of the novice mystic, maintaining a beginner's heart and mind. Dr. Dunyon, what would you like to leave our listeners with today? What do you want them to take away from your work?
I think one bottom line would be that I've come to believe that most of us are really not afraid of taking risk in life. But what we're really afraid of is if we take a risk and there are some unfavorable results, how harshly we will treat ourselves because of it and not forgive ourselves. I think it's a very big deal.
It is a big deal. And I thank you for being with us today. Thank you for sharing your insights. And I know listeners can find out more about you at pauldunyon.com, pauldunyon.com. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, you're welcome, Vicki.
And the book, again, is called Path of the Novice Mystic. Paul Dunyon is the author, Dr. Paul Dunyon, Maintaining a Beginner's Heart and Mind. And please stay with us. We need to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Dr. Mary Rockwood Lane on Healing with the Arts. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Please stay with us. Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Peggy Kaler and West Star Mortgage, we cover the world of animals. This week, November 10th, it's a Vet Sunday with our favorite, Dr. Bill Burlingame. Join us as we help launch his new business venture, offering the best in immune support products for dogs and cats directly to the public. Plus, he'll be offering a telephone consulting option, and we'll have open phone lines for your animal medical care questions. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Following the herd is fine until they lead you off a cliff. Think for yourself. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and we're focusing on healing today. And in this segment, we're focusing in particular on healing with the arts. And I'm very pleased to have with me Dr. Mary Rockwood Lane. She's an RN with a PhD. She's the co-founder and co-director emeritus of Shands Arts in Medicine at the University of Florida, Gainesville. And she teaches there creativity and spirituality in healthcare. She's also co-authored 5 books, including Creative Healing and Spirit Body Healing. Let me tell you just a little bit about her co-author, who's not with us, but Dr. Michael Samuels is the co-founder and director of Arts as a Healing Force. He teaches at San Francisco State University's Institute of Holistic Studies. He is a physician, and he's the author of 22 books, including the Well Body and the Well Baby book. Dr. Mary Rockwood Lane, welcome to the show.
Hello, I'm excited to be on your show. Hello to all your listeners.
We're excited to have you here. And the book is called Healing with the Arts, a 12-week program to heal yourself and your community. And
yeah.
Some great work in here. So let's start with a quote from the book. And I mentioned this at the top of the hour. You say that healing with art is powerful medicine. In fact, it's the most powerful medicine that we know of in healing the whole person on physical, vital, mental, emotional, psychic, and spiritual levels. Talk to us about that, if you would.
Well, if you really look at what are the possibilities in which somebody can use to work with their own personal healing, tapping into your own creativity is really allowing yourself to tap into your most vital life force. And when you use creativity, it's a very holistic approach in which you can find a relationship to what it is in your life that needs to be healed in a very profound and powerful way. And it's been used by patients in hospitals, and it's been used by family members and caregivers. And it's really a program that we have developed where people were creating art and really allowing themselves to go into this very powerful and therapeutic experience for themselves. And it was very transformative.
Mm. Now, you're a nurse. Your co-author is a physician.
Right.
How long have you been working with this?
I've been really working with this about almost 30 years. I discovered it in my own personal journey. when I was going through a physical and emotional illness that was so traumatic to me. I was very sick, and I really was using a lot of different kinds of interventions. I was in therapy, and I was dealing with my physical symptoms. And what I ended up finding that was the most powerful is I discovered for the first time in my life that I could paint. And I was so sick during that time, everything else in my life sort of had come to an abrupt stop. But I discovered painting, which I had never given myself permission to do, and I started making art every single day, and I realized it was a very powerful healing experience, and I healed myself through this journey of making art.
Now, you're not saying that this can cure all things. You're saying heal. So tell us the difference. Tell us what you mean by healing, if you will.
Healing is different from curing. Curing is something that we sort of eliminate the disease. But in many times, even if someone is facing a divorce or dealing with cancer or dealing with a life-challenging illness, there is an opportunity in that crisis, in that health challenge, to really go to a deeper place of healing ourselves, healing ourselves at a deeply fundamental place inside, where we sort of look at in reflection to what it is in our life that comes up at this time that we need to change, that we need to transform our relationship with ourselves, our relationship with our bodies, our relationship with our emotions. So when I say begin to make art, making art is tapping into kind of a real incredible creative potential within yourself, where you begin to move into a place in yourself where you tap into aspects of yourself that you may not even be aware of.
Right.
And that can give you the resources and strength and power at a deeply healing level. And many times when people say, I used art and it was healing to me, I said, what do you mean by that? They said, well, it healed me at the essence of who I was. I discovered my authentic self. I discovered what was the deepest and most important thing about my life. It healed me at a spiritual level.
I love that. I think it's so true. I mean, I do believe myself that creativity puts you in touch with the essence of who you are in this busy, busy world.
It's true.
And when we're talking art, you mean visual arts, literary arts, music, dance, even cooking, gardening?
Oh, yes. Because our creativity, what you're going to find is what is it that you resonate with? What is it in your life that your most creative essence and energetic force resonates with you? It could be dance. It could be poetry. It could be cooking. It could be gardening. Whatever it is that takes you to that place inside yourself that is expressive, creative, getting into a flow where you get into that zone where you are just totally authentically present with your very essence of who you are. And many things can get us to that place.
Right. So I'm assuming you're somewhat familiar with, maybe with Julia Cameron's The Artist's Way book, right? And for those who are familiar with this, her 12-week program, which is about healing yourself creatively.
Right.
Tell us how yours is very different from Julia Cameron's and why 12 weeks?
Well, what it is the book is based on a course that I've been teaching for many years. And the time of, you know, it's one of the essential requirements of the book, or just not guidelines of the book, not
right.
A requirement, but a guideline, is to make a journal to where you become in relationship with yourself. Not that different from The Artist's Way, but in that this really allows you to explore all the different mediums of making art. And The Artist's Way is a fantastic book, and this book that I'm working on is an evolutionary progress for that book, and really looking at how we can use our bodies, our voices, our movement, our writing as a way of healing. And throughout this book, there are all kinds of exercises that can be used as guides, you know, simply guides that allow people
right.
to make art as medicine.
Right.
So this is really intentionally taking what it is in your life that needs to be healed, and it becomes the canvas of your creativity.
I love that, the canvas of your creativity.
Right.
The premise of the book is that each of us has an inner artist and an inner healer, and the first goal of the book is to marry those two, which you say then changes the physiology of our body through the creative process. So tell us how you begin by marrying those two, our inner artist and our inner healer.
Well, the inner heart artist, when you sort of merge with, when you merge with the inner artist within you, everyone is an artist. Everyone has the potential and a wellspring of creativity within themselves. And many times, we have not created an intention to really know and express the many aspects of ourselves that we could. So this book is a 12-week program that allows you to explore many different mediums and reclaiming your artist nature, releasing the critic, anything that would prevent you and create obstacles for you to get into that natural flow of being able to move into your creative process. When you move into the creative process, it's very similar to moving into a healing physiology that allows you to go to a place that decreases stress, that goes to a place that optimizes your physiological being, where your blood pressure, your heartbeat, your breathing, you go into a place where it's really removing yourself from all the stresses and anxieties and criticisms, and allows you to get into that physiological flow that's very healthy,
right,
that moves us into our heart, into the natural rhythms, not the fight or flight, but the part of yourself where you cultivate that way of being and connecting to your center and finding that inner place of peace and joy and authenticity. Because when you're really deeply connected, whether it's even if you're connected to your pain, there is a connection there that allows your body to move through a transformative movement that changes your physiology, that goes one from blocking, resisting stress to one there is a release and a letting go.
Yeah, you talk about the importance. In fact, the first two steps really are about pain and darkness, facing your pain. And then, you know, that can take you to a whole other place.
Right. And what you're actually doing is you're taking things inside yourself that are painful or dark, and actually by integrating it and flowing it into the creative process, you're actually changing your physiology. There's research that shows when you make a new act, like a creative act, and you are creating a new memory and a new creation, a new art, a poem, it actually changes the experience of how that if it was a painful memory, or how your body registers that pain or that illness. It actually, you know, there is so much about the human body that we know, but there is so much that we don't know. And we do know that this actually creates a shift in your physiological basis that can open your body up to healing on many, many different levels, not just physically, but emotionally, spiritually, mentally. It opens up the floodgates of how we can truly tap into the inner healer.
Right. And this is very well studied work. You mentioned that, you know, we know and we do know because it has been studied so well.
That's right. There's been so many studies that, I mean, the truth is there's 30 years of research on how music alone can change, can shift physiological ways of being from unhealthy to healthy.
Yeah.
There's a tremendous amount of research out there already. And really, this book is really an invitation for someone who might be in a place in their life where they just need a nudge or a guide to be able to go into remembering something that they love, that they might have always wanted to do, that really expresses the artistic side of themselves,
mm-hmm,
that they have forgotten about. And this is like, go back and remember a time in your life where you wanted to do something and you haven't done it. And this actually, with the intention of healing yourself and integrating those two intentions, can be transformative in your life. So it's bridging those two, the creativity with what it is in your life that needs to be healed.
Yeah, I was at a Parkinson's disease conference a couple of years ago, and they had all kinds of specialists there. One who had just completed a new round of studies on music with Parkinson's patients and the difference that different types of music, how different types of music affected them. You know, some weren't so helpful, but others were. And Frank Sinatra, if you're interested, Frank Sinatra was one of the ones that was really helpful.
That's so true. It's great. And there's so much that we don't know. You know, science has always focused on, you know, pharmaceuticals and interventions and medical interventions, that we, the unbelievable, there is unbelievable amount of potential of what art, music, dance, movement, it's phenomenal how much is out there that is really healing, that we can engage on our own, in our own lives, with our families, within our own communities, that can be tremendously healing.
Right. Well, we're going to take a quick break, Mary. When we come back, I'd like to ask you to share a couple of stories from the book, that you share some stories of various people in the book. And, you know, so just so our listeners can see how this has worked for other people.
And I would love that.
The book is called Healing with the Arts. It's my guest here is Dr. Mary Rockwood Lane, and she co-authored this book with Dr. Michael Samuels. And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair with Conversations Live. If you'd like to gain more exposure for your business, service, or event, or if you'd like to raise awareness for an issue or topic you're passionate about, call me. Let's talk about ways we might partner to shine the spotlight on you and bring you the recognition you deserve. Call me at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
If you served honorably in our nation's armed forces and you're looking for a way to continue serving your fellow veterans in your community, then join AMVETS. Each year, AMVETS members volunteer millions of hours at VA healthcare facilities from coast to coast, helping to improve the lives of their fellow veterans through the VA Voluntary Services Program. AMVETS posts and departments also participate in a wide variety of community service projects, ranging from Americanism in our schools to supporting the Special Olympics and Boy Scouts of America. If you no longer wear the uniform today, you can still serve through the AMVETS by joining today at AMVETS.org.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
More choices, more topics, more shows. One station. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And my guest in this segment is Dr. Mary Rockwood Lane. She's co-authored a new book called Healing with the Arts, a 12-week program that she's developed with and co-authored with medical doctor Michael Samuels. So, Mary, before the break, we were talking about the power of how creativity can help us in the power of healing. I asked you if you'd share a couple of your favorite stories from the book. And before we do that, I want to just mention I posted on Facebook this morning. I've been missing in action the last couple of weeks because I've been on vacation with my brother. And I made a post this morning, and Joyce Stevens, who actually has been a guest on our show in the past, had put a comment on there that she really believes in the power of this too, and that she belongs to a knitting group, 275 folks right now, and really believes in the power of healing through creativity. And I loved her quote at the end. It's cheaper, much cheaper than therapy.
Really great.
So I wonder if you'd share just a couple of examples with us, a couple of the stories that you've worked with people and how that's helped them.
Well, there's so many stories, but I'd like to share you a story of a young woman who I was working with. And she was a woman who was really having an experience of not accepting her own body. She always felt like there was something, she felt like there was something wrong with you, as many women today do. Like, she just was not comfortable in her body. She was hypercritical, and she had a self-image of not being the way she wanted her body to be. And she was feeling like she needed to really work with her image of her own body. So one of the things that she did, was to begin to take photographs of different parts of herself and paint them and make art. And she did, one of the things that she did that was very beautiful is she started with just simply by taking photographs. And then as time got on, she started simply by making a mask. She was really interested in making a mask on her face. And she ended up making a series of these masks. And she had never done masks before. But each mask was an aspect of herself that spoke to her. And it was like she called her project the Masks of Wisdom.
Oh, it's not lovely.
And what she did was each one of the masks was as if she made them, and she made them very spontaneously and didn't think about it, and she just got into making the mask, and she made all these different masks. And then she basically asked, it was as if she wrote what the mask would say to her about her body, the different things that she needed to heal. So it was like she created a relationship with herself, to where she began to hear a different voice emerge within herself as she communicated, as she asked each mask to tell her a story. And she was kind of healing her own self-critic, what was about her own body.
Mm-hmm.
And she had this feeling that she hated her body, but then she began to have a dialogue where she began to really understand what it was that was holding her back. And it was as if these masks were different aspects of herself that were there to talk to her about how to heal her and her relationship. And it was very powerful, because not only did she make her masks, she started working in her journals, she started using her photography, and it just sort of metamorphed into what it was about. You know, it took her deeper into what her issues were and how she wanted to relate to her body. And in the end, really the healing came to self-acceptance and beginning to see her body in a different way than she had ever seen it before. Because she said when she put on the mask, it was as if she saw through the mask and she was a different person when she looked at herself.
Yeah, interesting. I think it's important to mention here that, you know, we don't have to be good at art.
Right. No.
When we're doing this, you know, it's about the process.
Exactly. And it's about just doing it. It is the process. And the product, what is so amazing when people make art, the truth is, if you can just get any critical mind away, people will discover that they actually love what they're making, even if it's primitive or childlike. People naturally get into the experience,
right?
And they get absorbed and they forget themselves.
Yes. And isn't that, you know, in being in the zone or the flow, and
exactly.
That's so important. You know, I saw this with my own mother. If I can just share a quick personal story, because she had Parkinson's disease,
right?
Had been very active and a sportswoman all of her life. And suddenly she's, you know, housebound most of the time. But she'd also painted a little when I was very young. And she started oil painting again. And in the last 15 years of her life, she did well over 30 paintings, which people were actually fighting over when she died.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's exactly.
And she never thought she enjoyed her painting. She never thought they were good enough to, you know, sell or anything like that. But people were really, you know, I'd really like that painting when she passed away. And I saw it lift her up out of her, you know, depression and way of thinking.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it really, you know, the creative process is like, it's a self-discovery, and it doesn't necessarily have to be art that anybody sells, but it's art that really is an expression of who she really was. And when she passed away, you know, those kind of gifts that she leaves her family and leaves her friends is something that no one else could have given them to her,
mm-hmm.
given it to them but her.
Right.
Now,
I know this. You do this work with people with, you know, really serious conditions like cancer and AIDS. Tell us, if you would, a story from somebody who's healed themselves along the way.
Well, one of the things when we brought the opportunity to make art into a cancer center, many times patients say, "I'm not an artist. I can't do this. I refuse to do this." And what we discovered is when people during the day would give themselves permission just to dabble with the paint or dabble with the drawing, it was as if one of the things about the creative process, it almost has a life of its own.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you open up a doorway, you open up your journal, you take some colored pencils or some paint, and you just begin the process. And that's all you have to do is create that space, allow yourself to take the time, and it just begins to happen. It's that easy and that simple.
Yeah.
And what we discovered, there was a man who was going through a cancer and was going through a very, very painful, you know, treatment process where he was very frightened. And he actually started painting every single day and became so engaged with his painting process that he became an artist that he had never been painting before, and then became a sculptor.
Wow.
And became, and just, it sort of opened up the doorways. It was like a floodgate. And it changed his whole life.
Right, right.
You know, and it's like, and especially if you're like with your mother dealing with Parkinson's, to find that creative experience that allows you to be really, truly connected with yourself. And to find something that gives you pleasure, something that you love, something that you enjoy. We can never underestimate the power of just going to do the very things in our life that make us happy.
Yes, yes. And hopefully, you know, we'll do that regardless. We don't need to go to a place of heartbreak or illness.
Exactly.
to do that. But for those who have, this is an awesome book. And I do think you're doing amazing work, Healing with the Arts, a 12-week program to heal yourself and your community. So what's a final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with? I know you're coming out here in January to East West Bookstores. We'll remind our listeners of that closer to the date. But what do you want to leave our listeners with today?
I'd love to leave your listeners with the knowledge and wisdom of knowing that they are truly an artist. And when they reconnect with that artist within themselves, they're reconnecting with the very part of themselves that is a healer, and that artist will lead you to the place within yourself where you can heal yourself of what it is in your life that needs to be healed right now.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you being with us today. And what's the best place for, I know you've got a couple of different sites out there, what's the best place for people
to find you? The best place is www.healingwiththearts.com.
Okay.
We have our blog on it. We have a lot of information on it. We have sample chapters. So it's really a great place to start. If you're interested in looking at this work and engaging in it, the website is a good place to start.
Right. And I read in here that there are tags that if somebody has a smartphone.
Yes. Oh, yeah. You can go through the book. This is the greatest thing. You can go through the book, and with a smartphone, you can put your little smartphone over the micro tab, and there I'll come up, or Michael will come up, and we'll be talking to you on a little video.
There you go.
I think that's so fun.
Well, you've been a delight to talk with. Mary Rockwood Lane, I appreciate you being with us today, and wish you all the best, and we'll remind listeners of you coming out here in January. Thanks for being with us. And the book, again, is called Healing with the Arts, a 12-week program to heal yourself and your community. Well, I thank each of you for being with us today. If you missed any of today's show, you can catch it on podcast. It will be up live tomorrow. And you can also find out, you can also reach me, rather, at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. If you have any questions or suggestions about future upcoming shows, you can also reach me at info@conversationslive.net. That's info@conversationslive.net. And of course, we're on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair and on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. I got a message from someone saying my Facebook page looked abandoned because I've been traveling for 2 weeks with my brother. And the person who was going to update it for me went missing in action. But never mind. We'll get it back up to speed. So thanks for being with us today. Again, thanks. We'll be back next week. Until then, live well, live strong. Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.